So thanks for being here at this late stage of the meeting. I'm going to be speaking today about a qualitative research project that we did to understand veteran perceptions of the suicide risk assessment process that is occurring in the VA healthcare setting. And I have nothing to disclose. To give a little bit of background, actually beginning 2006, 2007, the VA developed a multimodal strategy to address suicide prevention, and that include trainings of clinicians and staff, development of a suicide prevention coordination program, development of crisis lines, chat lines, and some of the things that Rob mentioned before. Well, one piece of this was making suicide risk assessment for patients with depression and PTSD a national performance goal. So for about a decade, the VA has been doing routine screening for depression and PTSD in most outpatient care settings and some inpatient settings using brief measures for those conditions. And what happens is that the electronic medical record triggers a reminder on a periodic basis, and then these screens are administered typically in primary care by medical assistants or nurses, or in mental health settings by mental health clinicians. And what began happening in 2007 is that a positive depression or PTSD screen would activate a brief suicide risk assessment template in the medical record. And these templates were intended to be used in conjunction with clinical judgment to assess risk. However, many medical centers are really using them more as screens, meaning that they administer these measures and then they, you know, move on if it's negative. And just to give you an example of what one of these brief measures or assessments looks like, this is from the Portland VA. At the top, you may not be able to read it, but it says, "Are you feeling hopeless about the present or future?" And then the next question is, "Have you had thoughts about taking your life?" And if the answer is yes to that, that's what we consider a positive risk assessment, and that's typical for what other medical centers do. So that one of the problems here is that there really is limited empiric support for screening or use of brief risk assessment tools. There's been several U.S. Preventive Task Force reviews of this issue, the most recent one being in 2013, which have really concluded that aside from perhaps some adults benefiting from this, there's just not a lot of information to support use of routine types of screening activities. In addition, we have a very little amount of information suggesting that veterans who die by suicide may deny suicidal ideation at their last clinic appointment. So we had done a study in Oregon a number of years ago suggesting that about a third of veterans, when asked at their last visits about suicidal ideation, denied it, or a third of those veterans endorsed suicidal ideation, yet went on to die by suicide. And we're currently conducting a larger study using the state mortality data set that Rob talked about, with an 11-state sample that suggests that the numbers are about the same. About a third of the veterans who are asked about suicidal ideation at their last visits prior to suicide will endorse it. That means two-thirds aren't. Now, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily having suicidal ideation at that moment, but some people may be having suicidal ideation and be reluctant to disclose it. And that's really where the focus of today's talk is that we really don't know much about the factors that promote or discourage honest disclosure of suicidal ideation. So we did a study, which was a mixed method study, and it really had a number of components. First component looking at what were the correlates of positive risk assessments among veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan. Second question is, to what extent are processes of care affected by positive assessments? And then the third, which is the focus of today, which is, what are the veterans' experiences of the risk assessment process and their perceptions of clinicians' responses to the results? So this component was a qualitative study led by Linda Ganzini on our team. And we worked with veterans who were seen at VAs in Oregon, Indiana, and Texas. We included veterans who'd had positive screens for PTSD and depression and positive suicide risk assessments. We interviewed veterans 2 to 6 months after their assessment, And we attempted to recruit women and an ethnically diverse group of veterans. Interviews were audio taped, transcribed, and de-identified, and we used modified grounded theory to analyze the data. And for our interview guide, we asked about recollections of the suicide assessment process, veterans' comfort or discomfort, how the care setting influenced their responses, and then regarding suicidal ideation, were they hesitant to discuss suicide, reactions from providers and staff, positive and negative views, and consequences of disclosure. We also inquired how military experiences might have impacted the process for their perceptions. Demographic characteristics of the group. We interviewed 34 veterans, mean age of 35, so relatively young. Most were men, and multiple disciplines were involved in the assessment process, administering these brief risk assessments, and some people had multiple providers. So I've been trying to get to the good stuff here. So what I'm going to do here is give a brief overview of what we found, and then I'm going to just try to leave a few moments of silence for you to read through these, because I really don't want to read every one of these examples. So basically, veterans had some positive views of the suicide assessment process. In general, they thought it was straightforward. It was clear. They really had expected it, a lot of times based on their military experiences. They were used to completing these types of assessment, and they appreciated that the language in the assessment tools was not ambiguous. About a good amount of time? Okay. criticisms of the assessment process. So they had a number of criticisms of the assessment process. One is that the assessments were perceived as being painful and shameful reminders of either past attempts that they might have made or very difficult times that they'd had in the past. Another key criticism was that the assessments were often repetitive. So from our quantitative analysis, the mean and the median number of assessments veterans had in a 30-day period was 2, but we had some veterans who had up to 6 of these suicide risk assessments done over a 30-day period. And when that had occurred, they had been asked multiple times, they sometimes sensed that there were communication gaps within the team. And this led to a sense of futility about getting their mental health needs addressed adequately. All right. Another criticism was that they felt there was an inability to really provide context. So the questions were often perceived as too simple. There was no opportunity to really clarify their thoughts or give complex or nuanced answers. They often felt that there was a risk of their answers being misperceived or the level of safety being misperceived. And in this case, it seems pretty clear that this was not an assessment that was done in the context of a clinical discussion. Seemed to be kind of standalone, and that was a common experience. There were a number of barriers to disclosure of suicidal ideation. Veterans were accustomed to minimizing and suppressing thoughts of suicide. Based on their military experience, they often felt that expressing this type of feeling was not consistent with being a good soldier. And in general, they believed that they should cope on their own. Veterans were also sensitive towards feeling a lack of respect, particularly on initial interactions or with people that they didn't know, with triage personnel. And this often was fueled if someone was administering the questions, looking down at them instead of looking at them in the eye. At least this was commented on several times. And there were some relevant experiences in the military that seemed to contribute to problems with disclosure. Certainly the problem of stigma, and veterans also noted that the admission of suicidal ideation, at least in the military, there was a risk that it might delay a return home. And as I'd mentioned before, that these thoughts were generally not consistent with being a good soldier and dealing with these problems themselves. There were other barriers to disclosure, one important one being the fear of consequences. Veterans often worried, again related to the feeling of not being able to give context, that they might be hospitalized, especially against their will, or be offered medications for their thoughts, and often they really viewed medication as being not necessarily relevant or necessary. It's a little like a church or temple where you're kind of waiting for people to look up. And then that really the last category and one of the most prominent barriers to disclosure had to do with trust and privacy. In this case, veterans felt that suicidal thoughts were really personal, among the most intimate that they might have. And they wondered if suicide is just too sensitive a topic for a standardized screening approach. And sometimes when the evaluation was completed by a medical assistant or a nurse or a provider they didn't know, they perceived this as an invasion of privacy, or they experienced it as a perfunctory process, perhaps done for the purpose of completing paperwork. So the good news is that there were facilitators of disclosure that we learned about. Certainly, the disclosure of suicidal ideation was enhanced in the context of having a consistent provider who knew the patient well, whom they trusted. Veterans were more comfortable and willing to admit suicidal thoughts when providers expressed genuine concern or seemed to have a caring attitude. And even if someone didn't know the provider well, there could be some compensation by really the provider paying attention to developing a relationship and embedding the discussion into a larger clinical, more veteran-centered discussion. I think this last case is along those lines, somebody that the veteran did not know well, but seemed to be able to get the veteran to open up. So conclusions and recommendations. I didn't mention limitations. Obviously, this was a small sample. We did get the veteran group from multiple sites, and we did enough interviews until we reached saturation themes. So I think we got a fairly complex, we're able to do a fairly complex and comprehensive analysis for what a qualitative study can do. As far as recommendations and conclusions, suicide risk assessment really should be performed by a provider who knows the patient best, and ideally not triage personnel, or at least personnel who don't know the veteran. Risk assessment should ideally be part of a conversation. Misperceptions about the consequences of disclosure should be explored within that conversation, and providers really need to be aware of the potential for shame and avoidance around suicidal thoughts and the process. Finally, repetitive assessment should probably be avoided if that's possible. Thank you.